Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
The final gubernatorial debate between Democrat Maura Healey and Republican Jeff Diehl took place last night. It was co-sponsored by WCVB, the Boston Globe, WBUR, and Univision. With early voting beginning this weekend, we are going to dive beneath the headlines on that debate. Here with us, WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. Anthony, welcome back.
Nice to be here.
And Adrian Walker, associate editor, columnist for the Boston Globe, and one of the panelists last night. Adrian, thank you for joining us as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I just want to start with overall reactions. Anthony, dive in.
Well, I mean, I guess you can look at last night's debate as, you know, what did these two candidates have to do? For Maura Healey, the overwhelming favorite in this race, what she had to do was to come into that debate and do what front runners always need to do, and that is do no harm to herself. And on that measure, she succeeded. She probably went beyond that. She was crisp. She was cogent. Jeff Diehl, running well behind, had a much, much, much bigger task, and that was he needed to do something extraordinary to try to make up the gap against Healey or hope that Healey fell on her face. Neither of those things happened, so I think it was a tough evening for him. I think the dynamic in this race, as much as it was before the debate, that Maura Healey is the overwhelming favorite in a state where Democrats outnumber Republicans in a big way and where Donald Trump is not popular.
All right. So, Adrian, how about you, your initial reactions?
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I thought that Healey had a good night. I thought she had a very strong night. You know, one thing I was thinking about last night after the debate was, you know, I had really expected Diehl to kind of be more combative. It seemed like you spent a lot of the second half of the debate, you know, on issues like immigration and COVID, almost agreeing with Healey, you know, and you would think that a candidate who was so far behind would come out, you know, more aggressively, really throwing bombs, and we didn't see that at all.
So I'm going to play some sound to pick up on that theme. First, I am going to play some sound where Jeff Diehl, early in the debate, went after Maura Healey, which he often did on issues having to do with inflation and energy. So here he is blaming inflation on Maura Healey and Joe Biden.
You were one of the drivers of inflation. You chose and supported President Biden. He's the one who created a war on energy. We were energy independent. You have created your own war on energy in Massachusetts. That is the major driver that's costing businesses more money, passing it on to consumers, and making it so expensive to run a business, to employ people, and to try to be competitive with other businesses nearby and globally.
But then to Adrian Walker's point, we get later in the debate, towards the end, we're talking about immigration. I'm going to play the two candidates. They sound hand in hand here. So first, here is Jeff Diehl, who says it's one of the top issues facing Massachusetts and the country.
I think we're a much, much better commonwealth from the diversity that those people from different countries bring. So I want to make sure that immigration reform is done. I'd like to get our federal partners to stop blocking immigration reform, whether it's Republicans or Democrats. I mean, Democrats have had the House and Senate with the president right now. I'm not sure spending trillion-dollar bills was more important than trying to fix immigration. That's the core issue that seems to be affecting Massachusetts and our country right now.
And then you have Healey.
It's also the case that we desperately need to fix our immigration issues so that we have workforce here in the state, so that we have the visas, and so that we have people coming in, because I've talked to business owners, I'm sure you have as well, all across the state, major employers as well, desperately in need of workers and too stymied by a broken immigration system.
All right, so you know what I'm getting at, which is they're both saying, hey, it's a problem with broken immigration. Anthony, did Jeff Diehl sort of moderate and come out soft?
I don't know if he moderated. And I mean, that first cut, he focused on the problems with the economy, which is a smart thing for Republicans to do. They're doing it all over the country. Inflation is high. There's a lot of concern about that. I think it's a tougher case to tie the national economy to something that Maura Healey did. I mean, Jeff Diehl points frequently, and he did it last night, to the fact that Maura Healey helped block a pipeline coming from up north. Healey says she did it because ratepayers were going to be on the hook for that pipeline. Diehl is trying to make a case that because she's opposed to more natural gas coming in, it's her fault that prices are running high. Healey pointed out that we're also dealing with a war that has a lot to do with it, that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with any fault here in Massachusetts.
Let me come back. Actually, we'll pick up some sound there because we have a little bit of that, Anthony. And it takes us back to this energy thing, which, Adrian, I'm going to come back to you on. So here is Healy. Hey, not my fault.
This idea that we should just give up and not pursue things because it's hard is absolutely not where we need to be in Massachusetts. We can be aggressive, we can go out and do this, and I will work in the meantime to provide the relief. But the idea that I created the high cost of energy, there's a war on in Russia and Ukraine. That's not Massachusetts' fault.
So, Adrian, we were both panelists there last night. Deal came back to energy policy a ton of times. There, part of the reason Healy was saying, hey, we can't just give up because it's hard, is because he kept pushing that the agenda to go to renewables was going to cost people too much because it was too aggressive.
Right. But, I mean, the whole idea that there's a war on energy and Maura Healy is the driver of it was just bizarre to me. You know, it's obviously a much, much, much more complicated issue than this. And I just don't see where the votes are in this. Yeah.
That was a question, Anthony. I noticed both gubernatorial debates, Jeff Diehl goes after Maura Healy on energy. Is that because of utility prices right now? Where does one get the idea that that's a winning strategy with Massachusetts voters?
Well, I mean, I think across the nation, there's a lot of concern about rising energy prices at the gas pump, home heating oil, concern about inflation. So again, I think this is sort of out of the Republican playbook that's playing out across the country. Tiziana, you know what I thought was really remarkable in last night's debate? And we were talking about it a moment ago before we went on the air, and the same dynamic played out in the first debate, and that is how many times Maura Healy played to the center and embraced the current Republican governor. She embraced him on taxes, on climate, on asking the feds to help with home heating oil, on abortion, on the idea that she's a moderate and can work along party lines. Why isn't Jeff Diehl embracing the leader of his party and the most popular governor in the United States? It's bizarre to me. But again, smart politics on Maura Healy's part because Charlie Baker is a very popular governor and she wants to succeed him.
So, Adrian, here's some sound of Maura Healy doing exactly what Anthony was just saying.
Cutting taxes. I hope this month we see, Janet, those tax rebate checks go out to taxpayers. We also need to pass the tax reforms that Governor Baker proposed. These were tax cuts for seniors, renters, low-income, middle-income families. They included things like changes to the estate tax and, importantly, earned income credit for families.
She was answering Janet Wu's question about what she's going to do about inflation. And here you have the Democratic candidate who starts with, I will cut taxes, just like the current Republican governor wants to.
You know, I was really surprised to hear her say twice, actually, that she was going to cut taxes. But, you know, one of the most interesting things about this entire campaign to me has been watching the evolution of this sort of Healy-Baker relationship. I remember when she couldn't stand Charlie Baker. Huh. And now she can't talk enough about how much she admires him.
So one of the things that was interesting, too, about that, Anthony, is we are fully 8 years in now, right? We know Governor Baker's not running again. People have known that for a long time. Most recent polling numbers have shown that his popularity is sticky. How much of that is or can be a model for a next governor? And how much of that is just, I'm going to editorialize here, weirdly unique to Baker, who seemed to survive all kinds of challenges without having his popularity plummet?
See, I think Baker, I don't think it's weirdly unique to Baker. I think Baker is but soon he's going to be a vestige, a sort of memory of what a traditional New England Republican was. Someone who was socially liberal, who holds the line on taxes, fiscally conservative. It's worked in Massachusetts. It's the secret sauce that has allowed Republican governors to be elected again and again and again, despite the fact that this is a very blue state. That's Baker. This has played out across New England. And in this election cycle, we're seeing evidence that this is beginning to disappear. Well, it's begun to disappear a long time ago. But Republicans have embraced the Trump wing of the party. We see all across New England these primaries that have weeded out the moderates and hardline Republicans are running. And in many cases, they're having a hard time, in New England that is, against the incumbent Democrats. It's true in New Hampshire. It's true in Connecticut. It's true in Maine. So we're really seeing the kind of disappearance of the Baker kind of Republican. And as a result, they're left with this Trump wing and virtually no seats in Congress across New England, for example.
But so, this is the catch-22, though, for Jeff Deal, right? Which is that you have this Massachusetts Republican Party that's really pro-Trump and right-wing, but you can't possibly win in a general election that
way. That's right.
Right? So he's gone way right to curry favor with this party, and now he's in a general election 30 points behind with hardly any strategy.
So this was a remarkable moment. Now, the issue being discussed, and we can talk more about this, was abortion at the time. But this was where Jeff Deal made the argument that as governor, he's not going to have impact, basically, on abortion policy. Let's hear this.
As governor, I don't make the decision on the Roe Act. The legislature is a Democrat-controlled House and Senate. My estimation is that will be the case for a number of years. There is no way I'm changing that law. So to try to scare people, I know it's Halloween. Stop scaring people about abortion. It doesn't make any sense.
Last night, that really struck me. When you run for governor, arguably, you are running to be the head of your party in the state where you would be elected. And to have the Republican candidate for governor say, it is my estimation that will be the case for a number of years, is essentially ceding that the party you're representing can't win the legislature anytime in the future. I felt like it cannot be the case that we've heard that much in the past, Adrian.
I guess we haven't heard it that much in the past, but I mean, if you look at the numbers and you look at what's been happening in elections here in the last 4 to 8 years, I mean, he's absolutely right. I mean, there's not going to be a Republican majority in Massachusetts anytime soon.
And Anthony, you've been following that.
Yeah, I mean, I think what strikes me as about this is all across the country, we've heard examples of Republicans running to the right to win the nomination and then pivoting to the center to try to win the general election. Looking at a Senate race up in New Hampshire, Don Bolduc, the Republican retired brigadier general, he was an election denier. Then suddenly he won the Republican primary, and lo and behold, he says, nope, I've done my research, and it turns out Joe Biden did win the election. What I find remarkable about Deal, and maybe it's to his credit, is he didn't do that pivot. You know, he was hard right to win this primary, and he's sort of sticking to his guns that he's anti-abortion. He's anti-abortion, but as he says, he's not going to be able to convince an overwhelmingly Democratic legislature to change its mind on the Roe Act.
Go ahead,
but
Adrian.
I think Healy made a legitimate point when she said, when she says, in effect, you can't keep saying you're anti-abortion and then say with any credibility, oh, but I won't do anything about it. Why should anyone believe or trust that?
Yeah, and she also made a case that the governor does, in fact, have impact on abortion, regardless of what's going on with the legislature. Here she is.
It's just not true. The governor absolutely has a lot to do in this space. You think about a governor's administration, what they're going to do with mass health, what they're going to do with health care, what they're going to do across a range of agencies that directly intersect on this issue. It's just not the case that it doesn't matter who the governor is.
Is that true, Anthony?
Well, yeah, I mean, there are policies all across state government that obviously are going to be influenced by the governor's view on abortion. So that's what Maura Healey was referring to, and I think she's right there. I mean, I think Jeff Deal is in a tough position being anti-abortion in a state where abortion rights are overwhelmingly supported.
There was a surprising moment on that front, at least to me, Adrian, as well, where Deal talked a little more personally about where his position comes from.
My view on abortion, I just have to clarify, comes from personal experience. My parents made a decision to have me when Roe v. Wade was not the law. Had it been the law, I was told I may not have been here. Look, and that is my own personal experience I'm sharing with you. The fact is that just shapes my view on abortion. However, I also know in legislating that there are times when you have to put your personal decisions aside and understand that the legislature and the people of Massachusetts have spoken on this issue. Abortion will be protected when I'm governor, despite what she wants you to think.
That stood out to you, Adrian.
Yeah, it did stand out to me. I don't know that I've ever heard anyone in public life say, you know, I'm against abortion because my parents probably would have had one.
Is there any chance that that type of personal story, which we haven't really heard from Jeff Deal, changes any voters' minds about I'm more comfortable if I disagree with him that he will stay in a lane I can tolerate? Do you understand my question?
Yeah, but it's hard to imagine that somebody in an office like governor is going to govern guided by anything other than what they really stand for and believe.
So, Anthony, I'll come back to you. A minute ago, you talked about the fact that we're seeing across the country this challenge with Republican. And let me backtrack, actually. We're speaking with Anthony Brooks and Adrian Walker, debriefing last night's gubernatorial debate, which was co-sponsored by WBUR, WCVB, the Boston Globe, and Univision. Anthony Brooks, back to you. This idea that we're seeing Republicans across the country who are tacking hard to the right for the primary and then have to hit the middle. You know, you talked earlier about how much Maura Healey has been embracing Governor Baker. You both did. But I remember during the primary, her getting mad when people would say she was the less progressive candidate.
Right.
She would say, oh, no. Sonia Jane Diaz, who was her major opponent, last one to withdraw, is not more progressive than me. So didn't she do the same thing?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, because Chang Diaz got out of the race so early, Maura Healey never really had to tack too far to the left to try to, prove her progressive bona fides. I mean, you know, Healey is a progressive on a number of issues. She spent a large part of her career as attorney general suing the Trump administration, going after big corporations, defending immigrant rights. She's very strong on LGBTQ rights and so forth, the right to an abortion, et cetera, et cetera. But she never really had to go hard left on things like Medicare for All, which Sonia Chang Diaz was for. And I think in a way she was spared that debate in the primary. So she was able to kind of run a fairly moderate campaign that I think probably appeals pretty well to a lot of independents and moderate Republicans who are happy with Charlie Baker. And she's been able to stay remarkably consistent through most of the primary and now the whole general election cycle. So I think this whole absence of a strong primary opponent has really helped her in her fight against Deal. That said, I think Deal always had a very, very steep climb, whether or not Maura Healey was going to be subjected to a challenge from the left.
So, Adrian, there was another significant absence from the debate last night, and I'll set it in relief by, I think, maybe the only time we heard him referenced in the whole debate. Here's Maura Healey.
My opponent's record and his actions on this could not be more clear. As I said, he does not support a woman's access to abortion. And the use of the term infanticide is just a rip from the Trump playbook, an extreme playbook that does not honor or respect a woman who is faced with an incredibly difficult decision.
Trump. I mean, I think we all expected Healey to hammer away at that. Trump came up almost not at all last night.
Yeah, that was a great surprise to me to hear only one reference to Trump. For one thing, I think Healey was not, didn't want to be overly aggressive last night. And again, I go back to my earlier point that Deal was pretty passive too. So I think that kind of combat over Trump just never happened.
One last piece of sound that I want to play here, because again, Deal has been pushing in his literature and his campaign communications a lot about what his core message to parents is. Here he is in his closing arguments.
My opponent thinks that government is the solution to everything. My goal is to provide you more freedom, economic freedom. You should keep more of your money. The state is taking more of it than they need. You should get healthcare freedom. You should have the choice with your lives to get the healthcare that you decide, not government forcing it on you, and educational freedom. I'll give parents the choice to educate their kids the way they want to.
So, Anthony, in our last 30 seconds or so, is that with different resourcing, with less of the other political issues you've talked about plaguing that campaign, is that potentially a winning message in the Commonwealth?
I don't think so. I really don't. I mean, again, this is a play from the hard right Republican playbook that plays well in states like Alabama. I mean, I think Chris Doty, the defeated Republican candidate for governor, put it well, that Jeff Deal is not going to be able to win running a campaign that works in Alabama, in Massachusetts. It's just not going to work.
All right. Anthony Brooks, WBUR senior political reporter, Adrian Walker, Boston Globe associate editor and columnist, also a panelist on the debate last night. Thanks for helping us break it down today. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
My pleasure, too.